Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, October the 10th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. In fact, we want to get to Bill right away because there's a lot of stuff happening on the agenda right there in New York. Bill, how are you today?
I'm reasonably well, Silvio. Yes, there is a lot that's suddenly happening in New York. We have a gubernatorial race that was almost solidly in the hands of the Democrats up until about 2 weeks ago. And then the race began to tighten as Congressman Zeldin, who was the Republican candidate and a good candidate, started applying more heat. And then just over this weekend, we had this remarkable, horrible event, actually, in that there was a shooting right outside Congressman Zeldin's home,
a gunfight.
And his children had to dive for cover inside the home. I hope that's not the best way of getting publicity, but it did call attention not only to his campaign, but to his main issue, which is crime, anti-crime. I don't know what the circumstances of the shooting were. Apparently, it was not related to Congressman Zeldin. I don't even know if they have the perpetrators in custody. But it was, of course, a very frightening moment for the family.
Yes, and of course, shootings in New York City are no longer isolated events. So, this is the type of violence that you have seen way too much in New York City here recently. So I'm glad nothing happened to his family, but it must have been a really scary moment to be inside a house and hear all that shooting around you. But, Bill, this you raised the campaign or what the campaign of Congressman Zeldin. And the fact that he's focusing so much on crime and the lawlessness in many cities, not just New York, you know, when I look at the electoral map and I see the tendencies on many of these elections moving to the Republicans, now you have most of the senators who, you know, a few weeks ago were pretty much 5, 6, 10 points out. Now all of a sudden they're within the margin of error, whether it's Arizona, whether it's Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And in all of those cases, it's crime that the Republicans are talking about, and it seems to be sticking. I mean, it's one of those issues that touches people because of stuff like this that happens in front of the congressman's home. I mean, stuff like this happens in a lot of other communities. The problem is that no congressman lives there, Bill.
That's the point. Crime is one of the major issues according to public opinion polls. How much it will count in the actual vote total at the end, I don't know, because, many people will say, well, there's a lot of crime, but not in my neighborhood. And they'll say, oh, yeah, I'm really concerned about it, but it's not in my neighborhood. So I think that for people who feel it viscerally, where it is in their neighborhood, it may have some effect on the vote total. I don't know if it will elsewhere. People do mention it. They mention it in conversations about New York City, you know, how the city has deteriorated. 10 years ago, New York City was the safest large city in America. And now it's a shooting gallery again. And the Democratic Party does not take any responsibility for it. They, in fact, have continued with these reckless policies of letting criminals out of a jail without paying any bail. The line you usually hear is someone's arrested for a crime and they're out of jail 2 hours later. And I'm sorry to say that is often the case. The reason for that is that the state legislature, not the New York City, well, the New York City Council is way to the left, but the state legislature is also way to the left. And they don't hear concerns about crime. To them, concerns about crime are racist. And if you increase the police, it's going to be simply to arrest black people. That's not true at all. We have a multiracial police department in New York City, but they will not hear anything. The Democratic Party, at least in New York State, is controlled by the squad and by the left wing crowd. And to them, defunding the police seems perfectly reasonable. So the mayor of New York can actually do very little to stop crime. He's not very effective anyway in anything he does. But, he doesn't really talk about it that much anymore, because without changes in the law and changes in some of the district attorney offices, and a governor, by the way, in New York can fire a district attorney, but the current governor is a Democrat, and she is beholden to the left wing of the party. And she's not going to fire any of these soft-on-crime DAs. So we're in a very bad situation.
Yes. I was listening, Bill, this morning to Mark Penn, the pollster,
mm-hmm.
as well as
yep.
former advisor to President Clinton. And he was being interviewed about the elections, and he was saying that he's detecting in the polls that they're doing that the crime issue is starting to get into the governor's races. Because if you live in a suburb, you're right. You may not have the crime problem that they have in the city, but you fear that it could be coming to you. And
yes.
many of the people who live in the suburbs have to go to work in the city, and they're seeing the crime and the lawlessness. So Mark Penn was saying in this interview that he's starting to see the issue of crime creeping into governor's races more and more and more, and that's where you may see the people who don't live in the cities express their opinions about the crime in the city, Bill.
I think that's correct. Also, governors are more associated with anti-crime action like legislation. A U.S. senator will be electing a third of the Senate in 4 weeks, 4 weeks from tomorrow, actually. But crime is generally considered a local problem to be solved locally. And, of course, that's what governors do. My great fear about this election, by the way, is that Republicans will fall just short, that they will make progress toward Election Day, but that in the end the red states will still go with their traditional Democratic officials, and many of them are basically running the same old Democratic line, that the Republicans will put people back into slavery, that it'll be a bigoted white supremacy government, all that stuff. I just have a fear that we'll get close, but not close enough. I hope I'm wrong. There are many people who believe in the polling business that the polls always underestimate the Republican vote. I hope that's the case. I also think Republicans right now must work on turnout, turnout, turnout. It's the old story. The only poll that counts is the one held on Election Day. Although nowadays, people are already voting.
Right.
With the campaign having 4 weeks to go. This early voting is a farce. It's a disgrace. It forces people to vote, especially people who are homebound or people who have difficulty getting to the polls. It forces them to vote before the campaign is over. Many things happen in the last weeks of a campaign, and the early votes have tended to favor the Democrats. So I hope the early vote is down and the vote on Election Day is up. But I agree with the more cautious pollsters who say, yes, the Republicans will probably take the House, probably not by as many votes as they anticipated, but that the Senate is very much a deadlock. Nobody's ahead. And
right.
that's the one that I fear. The Senate is where judges are confirmed.
Well,
as far as the – go ahead.
No, I was going to say, there are some people who fear that it could be 50-50 again.
Oh, yes.
Which, of course, would be an advantage to President Biden because he'll have a
yes.
tiebreaker. Assuming he can get Senator Manchin to go along again, but I just
– Yes.
You may have seen the story today of how unpopular
yes.
Senator Manchin has become in West Virginia. I mean, it's
yes.
He's dropping like lead. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens on Election Day. But I think if you look at this generic ballot, whatever that means – it seems the Republicans are back in the lead, and they seem to be gaining again. And, you know, whatever that means, I don't know. But I guess I'm optimistic about the election overall. But, Bill, I did want to ask you something else about New York City. The mayor is is really, and I guess the city is having a real problem dealing with these migrants. Now, all of a sudden, it's not fun being a sanctuary city, Bill.
No, this is just hypocrisy at its worst. These people fell all over each other on the political left to declare New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco and other so-called progressive cities sanctuary cities, never understanding they might have to put that into effect someday. Now it's in effect, and they're yelling for federal aid. And if you don't give us federal aid, you're a bunch of racists.
Right, but especially the mayor of New York City, for him to be criticizing, I guess he's criticizing everybody, especially, I guess, the governor of Texas. And the governor of Texas keeps saying, hey, don't call me, call President Biden. He's the one who's made it possible. But, you know, it's not just New York, but other cities that were so-called sanctuary cities are really having a problem. How many have actually arrived in New York? I understand that thousands have actually arrived in New York, Bill.
Yes, they arrived by bus, by very nice buses, by the way. The buses That's look right. beautiful. I'd like
yes.
to take that bus. And they are greeted by an official New York City committee of people saying, welcome to New York. And we have stories now coming out that they're being put into luxury hotels, that some of them are and I feel for these people. You know, they're just being used, and they mm-hmm. go around knocking on the doors of the other hotel patrons, saying, "Do you have any extra food for us?" And these hotels are going to start losing customers because the tourist industries are losing them anyway. You know, they say, well, New York is a great tourist attraction, and the Broadway Theater is a great tourist attraction. Well, if you want to be a tourist attraction, you better have something that attracts people. And right now, with the news about New York, the high crime rate, the Broadway at $130 a ticket for seeing things people don't even want to see, restaurants closing. This is not a place you necessarily would want to spend your vacation dollars on, and I think the city is beginning to feel it. Also, if we go into a recession, New York might be hit especially hard. New York and California, I believe, are the two biggest out-migration states in the country, meaning mm-hmm. they are losing population faster than other states because the price of living is high. And the income is not that high, and the future of industries is not that good. And as a result, people are moving out of these states. In New York, the budget of New York State is dependent heavily on income from Wall Street. And if Wall Street begins to suffer in a recession, we could have a really serious problem here in New York. And they don't know how to solve it because the first words out of their mouths is equity. We have to have equity. I mean, look at this nonsense about the aid given to states who were affected by the hurricane. And Kamala Harris says, well, it should be given on the basis of equity. No, it should be given on the basis of need, of who is actually affected by the hurricane. And, of course, she shut up in a minute. I think she was told to just shut up.
Not say anything.
But The conditions in the country are very poor. The morale of the country is very
right.
poor.
That's the part that bothers me, the morale of the country, because, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the last time I saw something like this, and it was 1979-80.
That's right. Exactly.
Now, the good news is that Reagan came, but the morale right now, I think it's maybe even lower than that back then. But one of the problems that I have with these migrants coming in is that, like, for example, when our family came to the United States, we came in an orderly fashion. That is, we waited for a specific time to come. We were given, the pass or whatever they called it to come into the country. And as soon as we were here, within days, my father could work. My father was given a green card. And we could work. He could work, in other words.
Yes.
So despite the fact that there were many generous people who helped us, there was a church who helped us, very generous people who helped us, within 2 weeks, within a month, we were able to pay the rent, or my parents were able to pay the rent, buy the food, and we were not dependent on anybody because we had the ability to work. That's the problem I have with these people who are coming in. If they could actually work right away, if they could work the next day, then maybe they would be useful to a city like New York, maybe some of these restaurants who cannot find people and so on. But that's the problem I have, is we're bringing in these people and there's no plan B for them to work. Now, the speaker says we should send them to Florida to pick up oranges. Well,
yes.
I think the speaker should maybe talk to some of the people who pick those oranges. That's a very difficult job to do.
It
and
is.
And not a job that any migrant can do. I will say, just for the sake of the story, that my uncle, my father's brother, actually did pick up oranges in Miami when we first, or in Florida, when he first came. And he picked them up for like 2 or 3 weeks. And he said that was very hard work, that his back never hurt as much as it
yes,
did, because
sure.
That's hard work. And it's honorable work. I'm not mocking it. I mean, people who do it, I respect them. But these migrants, Bill, are coming in, and what's going to happen to them when they're in? I mean, they cannot stay in hotels like that forever. They need to work, and there's no plan for that, Bill.
There apparently is no plan, because any plan that they come up with is immediately attacked by the far left, and they have some influence in Congress that you cannot just use these people for your evil industries and your gasoline engines. What else are they against? Let me see. They're against gasoline engines, and now they're attacking, by the way, they're attacking standards of excellence in schools. It's now become very much a part of the leftist idea that standards of excellence are a sign of white supremacy. This is
That's
madness.
Right.
It's just
it
madness.
And how overall is the mayor doing with respect to crime? I sense a tremendous dissatisfaction, Bill.
There is a tremendous dissatisfaction. First of all, I think it's getting harder and harder to get qualified police officers, as is true in other cities. Second, he is stuck with the New York State Legislature, which controls the basic laws. So this law about no cash bail, where you don't have to put up cash if you've committed a crime and you can get out on your own recognizance, there's no question that this is, first of all, depressing morale in police departments. Also, it is putting dangerous people back on the streets much too early. So I don't see any progress being made on the crime issue. And it is
right.
the most
and
important issue in New York.
It is, and one that he made his whole campaign about that.
Oh,
if
yes.
If you remember, he was going to be tough on crime. He was a former cop who was going to come in, and I think a lot of people like myself and yourself, I assume, we were hopeful that maybe finally there was going to be a sensible Democrat running things. And
yes.
But unfortunately, either – I see two things, Bill. One is, like you were indicating, that he cannot get the city council to cooperate or the state legislature apparently to cooperate. The other thing is maybe he's just a weak person. Maybe he's afraid of standing up to these people, Bill.
Well, actually, he stood up to them in terms of speeches. But there is nothing actually happening. There's no attempt to organize voters in the city. It's in New York City. Politically, is the dumbest city in America. They keep on electing people who bring them more crime. Now, maybe they consider that a gift. I don't know. But the city is still loaded with these old lefties and people from a different era. As I said, the legislature is not cooperative. They are very much to the left. And the mayor, I think, feels that these other forces that are at work against him have more power than he does. And I'm sorry to say that he's probably right.
Yeah, well, he's facing, I don't know, I hear a lot of backlash from people who live in New York, not just yourself, but just other friends and all of that. There's a sense of chaos and lawlessness. And what's sad about it, as you said at the beginning of the podcast, that 10 years ago, that was not the case. I mean, it was one of the cleanest and best-run cities in the country. And why is that? Well, I guess they just... They understood how to treat criminals, I guess. That's the only way I can say, Bill.
Well, this was a period back in the early part of the century that was affected by the administrations of Rudy Giuliani and then Mike Bloomberg, both of whom were very good mayors. Whatever you may think of Giuliani's antics today, but he was a very, very good mayor. He was called America's mayor for his very good work on 9/11. And they brought in the best experts on policing. They did not go to the black leadership. They know that the black leadership would veto anything they did. So they went around it. I mean, they made it very plain that the crime issue came first, not politics. And they lowered the murder rate in New York by 80%, 80. Now, they were immediately attacked by the political left, especially in journalism, the New Yorker and organizations like that. But eventually, people grudgingly said, yes, crime is down in New York City. And then, unfortunately, conditions changed. The Obama administration took over in Washington with its absolute lack of interest in crime. And then Mayor Bloomberg ran out of time. He got a third term because he could finance the change in the law. But he ran out of time, and in came Bill de Blasio, who in his own shower has a statue of Nikolai Lenin, not Nikolai. They put it.
I think it's Vladimir.
Lenin. Vladimir, yes.
Yeah, Vladimir,
I mean,
yeah.
This guy is further to the left than Joe Stalin ever was. I mean, he really was a left winger. He was elected with 18% of the vote because we have this bizarre primary here. And New York was ready and ripe for a Republican mayor. But the Republican Party in New York, the first thing they do in any campaign in New York City is they write the concession speech so that the guy running, who is usually someone no one's ever heard of, will not have to have the strain on election night of writing his own concession speech. I'll give you an idea of how bad the Republican Party is. We are represented by a congressman who's a member of the squad. He's the one male member of the squad, Congressman Bowman. We were redistricted, and we are now attached to a district in New York City in the Bronx. And while the people up where we are tend to be conservative, clearly, the people at the in most of the district are traditional Democratic voters. And the Republicans put up a perfectly nice candidate. We know her personally, actually. She's a physician, and she could run a good campaign. We have not gotten a single piece of literature from her campaign, not one, not even one identifying her as the candidate. I think people are going to go into the booth and wonder if there is a candidate for Congress on the Republican side. But they're just not interested enough. The Republican Party in New York is a very, very old-fashioned gentleman's agreement kind of party. I think that if the Democrats give them enough judges, they won't run any candidates at all. They just do not show up. Now, Zeldin is a Republican, but he's running his own campaign, and he's running a good campaign. He's going for television coverage. He's hitting the crime issue. I think he has a shot. The governor of the state of New York right now actually became governor when Andy Cuomo had to resign in disgrace. So she has never been elected governor. This would be her first election if she wins. She is not that well known. I wouldn't say she's unpopular. She's not well known enough to be unpopular, but she kind of isn't really there. But she does have the support of the big city political machines.
Right.
She comes from Buffalo, which is a big city. New York, of course, you know, in New York, they will go to the polls in a nuclear attack and vote Democratic. Even if the atom bomb had their name, had the Democratic Party's name on it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
there are these residual voters, but he is getting close, as Zeldin is. He prevails in the upstate vote, which is a Republican vote. It's a question of can he neutralize enough of the votes from New York City? And that's a question we will have answered in 4 weeks. I think it's going to be a tough fight. I think it can be won, but they're going to have to turn up every bit of heat they have.
Well, I think this is probably the best opportunity, that they've had for quite some time, because Zeldin,
yes,
like you said, has the personality and the topics. I mean, the topics. Now, I didn't ask you, as long as we're talking about New York, Bill, how are they celebrating Columbus Day in New York?
Oh, this is a big thing here. This is really you're getting into Civil War territory. I don't recall if the law was actually changed, but I think it was in New York City, that it will be now be called Indigenous Peoples Day. But I'm not sure the law was actually changed. Even if it wasn't changed, in all the schools, that's what they call it. I think, Bill,
think in some cities, like those very progressive cities like Seattle and whatever, they have called it Indigenous Day, but I'm not sure what indigenous group they're talking about.
That's right.
And because, I mean, the last time I checked, there were several of them, and I'm not sure which one gets to have their picture on the brochure of Indigenous Day, Bill.
Well, that's true. Now, I understand that in some communities they will allow both. I see that on the calendar, in fact, I'm going to click on it right now on my Apple computer, because I think I saw this morning, and they have both Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day. So you get a choice. You can do whatever you like.
Well, I'll take Columbus. How about you?
I'll take Columbus too. There's now a drive, especially in the Italian American community, to clear Columbus's name, saying he wasn't as bad as he was made out to be. It was a different century. It was the 15th century, after all. Columbus came in 1492, and we know that because the old Ballantine beer commercial would mention it. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And then he had his Ballantine. So we learned our history from Ballantine beer.
Right, which, of course, that was at Yankee Stadium, wasn't it? They had a big sign at Yankee Stadium, if I remember. Those old pictures of Yankee Stadium, there was a big one back there, wasn't there?
For Ballantine, and at Ebbets Field, there was a Schaefer sign because Schaefer was a sponsor of the radio broadcasts.
Oh, I see. So, but I like Columbus Day. I've always thought Columbus got a bad rap. He was not as bad as people say he was. And my goodness, I mean, the guy, I think he died not knowing what he had discovered. So how could he be that bad?
Well, they accuse him of just about everything and of being born in the wrong century. There is still a Columbus Circle. And in Columbus Circle, there is a statue of Columbus. Now, I think there was some move to take that down. That has not succeeded. I think, first of all, because the name is so old already, people want to call it, what are they going to call it, Indigenous People's Circle? I mean,
right.
and also, there is an Italian-American community here that still has some clout electorally, and I think that they would frown on any renaming of anything. So
I remember the joke that one time some people wanted to tear down the statue. Maybe not a joke. Maybe it actually happened, but I think it's pretty funny. They wanted to bring down the Columbus statue, and all of a sudden these black Cadillacs, started to go around the statue, and the people got the feeling that maybe it was not a good idea to mess
not
with
a good
Columbus.
Idea, yes.
Not a
That's
good
right.
idea to mess with Columbus. Bill, let's take a little break, and when we come back, we got a lot more to get into with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Well, Bill, I got to get one more little historical fact in. The U.S. Naval Academy celebrates the birthday today, 1845. So happy birthday to all of the graduates of the Naval Academy. The one that comes to my mind is Senator McCain. And also, I think Governor DeSantis of Florida was a graduate of that school as well. I think John Kerry as well. So quite a few Americans, successful Americans, have graduated from the Naval Academy, Bill.
Yes, I don't know about the last two. I think John Kerry was in the Navy.
Oh, okay, all right.
But let me look it up. I why not look it up? I think
I thought
John
DeSantis,
Kerry,
because I saw the way he was the uniform And I thought the way the uniform he was wearing in a recent photo, and so I thought it was him. But certainly John McCain, without question, was a very successful graduate of that academy, Bill.
Yes, well, he was. Yes, he actually graduated fifth from the bottom of the class.
Well,
but he became successful, and
right.
One of the reasons he became successful is that he was a legitimate war hero. He also came from a very, very distinguished military family. His father commanded, I think it was the 5th Fleet in World War II, and his grandfather was also an admiral.
Right, I think one of his sons also graduated from the Naval Academy, but
I believe that's correct.
I remember a story, but anyway, congratulations. 1845 is when the Academy was formed, and they started out with 50 men, that's all. And
that's
look where they are today. So this is
and West Point started out with two.
Oh wow.
There were two men in the entering class. I just looked up. John Kerry graduated from Yale. He would.
Okay, well,
he would. That's more his style.
Right,
you know?
That's right. Well, I hope he doesn't apply as a law clerk to.
Isn't that an amazing story?
It is. I was going to ask you about
federal judges have rebelled against Yale, which they now feel is losing its edge, and they have pledged not to hire any more law clerks from Yale.
That's right. Well, that's good.
Great idea.
The cancel culture finally is beginning to – there's some payback, I guess, for the cancel culture. I mean, I think it's ridiculous what's happening in some of these universities. But salute to the U.S. Naval Academy. Now let's go to another issue. This is one that I thought would be number one this week in our conversation, but it has – there's so many other things going on. OPEC versus President Biden. That didn't work out very well for President Biden or the country, Bill.
No, it did not. I think the president forgot the fact that in a confrontation with OPEC, OPEC has one great advantage. They actually have the oil. And they're using it against us. They really did show no mercy toward us at all in this big change in the price of oil. They acted only in their own interest, not as an ally, and I think we ought to remember that. It's the Middle East. They don't play by the other people's rules. And it demonstrates once again the wisdom of President Trump in making this country energy independent during his administration. This is something we must remind the American people about, that when President Trump left office, we were energy independent. Here it is a few years later, and we have to go around the world begging people to drill more oil, even though we have the capacity to do it ourselves.
That's right. We wouldn't even need OPEC or Venezuela. I mean, we would not need them at all. And you're right. I heard somebody say that President Biden is interested in drilling for oil anywhere but the United States, Bill.
That's exactly right. I mean, the hypocrisy is unbelievable. In not allowing us to drill for oil in the United States, not allowing fracking, people assume that we're doing something for the environment. No, we're not. We need that oil, and we're just buying it from someplace else. And they're drilling and they're fracking. So it is a completely symbolic move that is hurting the United States. It's hurting the cause of freedom, and it's hurting our economy. And I think that if the Republicans win the White House in 2024, and that's a very big if, I think they will cancel Biden's orders about fracking and about drilling, and we will start producing oil again, and it will be a welcome change.
But think about it, Bill. Think about the economic impact it would have, not just here in Texas, but in Alaska and Pennsylvania and some of these other places where fracking is big. I think even New York, there's fracking. And think of the economic impact.
It's been banned in New York.
Oh, okay. But think of the impact, the economic impact that it would have. The dollars that all of a sudden, instead of going to the Middle East, instead of going somewhere else, these dollars are now coming to the United States. They're coming into the pockets of Americans. Think of that, just the economic impact of being self self-independent or whatever the word is, independent of oil, not having to rely on anybody else, allows you to have a reserve that is full instead of depleting like we are right now. It allows you to be a lot stronger because oil is not just something in black. Oil is a geopolitical weapon, as we're seeing with Putin. I mean, all these European countries, we could be selling them oil, Bill. We could actually be taking care of them when Putin is doing something to them, Bill. So, the benefits of drilling in the United States are more than just, you know, economic. They're all around, Bill.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, you look around for some good story in the news, something positive, and the news is bleak. It really is bleak. Even when we seem to be making an advance, we are making an advance in certain states in the United States in education, where these woke curricula are being turned down and people are going to school board meetings and improving the schools. But for every one of those, the hard left will come back with a counterpunch. These people take their politics as a religion. They treat it that way. They will not change one bit. Not one bit. The amount of cancel culture in the colleges and universities today is the same as it was a year ago.
Right. No, that's correct. When you said that you were looking for a good story, I went to my iPhone and I just wanted to see what the market was doing, and that's not a good story either.
No.
No, that's a horrible story. And right under the headline, J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon or Dimon warned the U.S. The U.S. is likely to into a recession in the next 6 to 9 months. I think there's a lot of Americans who think we're already there.
Yes.
In a recession with the way things are going. Well, speaking of the world, the situation in Iran just continues to get worse. And the question I keep asking, Bill, where are the women? Where are all the feminists? In fact, I saw a video yesterday of an Iranian woman. I don't know whether she made the video in Iran or outside of Iran. I'm not sure. But she was asking that same question. She was saying, where are all these women around the world who were marching for women here, there, and everywhere? And now all of a sudden, they're not marching on behalf of the women in Iran. Look, I think if any woman in the world is being discriminated or stepped on, it's the women of Iran, Bill.
Absolutely. Well, I think I wrote about this actually on Urgent Agenda overnight. And what I said was that basically their inaction, their silence, recalls for us the charge made against the women's movement that it really isn't about women. It's about Marxist politics and that women's rights will be sacrificed. And I think they're proving it. This is not only this is not the only case this year where women's groups have been silent when it's clearly a women's issue, but the case of the destruction of women's sports by the demand that men who identify as women be allowed to compete against women. You'd think the women's movement would do something to bring relief to these women who are being confronted with essentially male athletes, but they were absolutely silent because on the left today, women's rights are not really very important. The only important right is the right to an abortion. You don't hear much about any other women's rights. And
right.
At one time, they had at least a respectable a slate of causes. Those are largely gone. They really are.
But you're right. It seems like the women's movement today is all about abortion. Or Trump.
That's right.
One of the two.
Yes,
they're
that's
either,
right.
They're either talking about Trump or they're talking about abortion. But if there is a case, if there's an exhibit A in the world of supporting women in need and women really who are being harassed and in many cases killed and beaten, it's Iran. You would expect all of the feminist groups to be marching in the capitals of the world, and I guess they're not. And that, as you say, I think speaks volumes about what they really care about. The other thing I wanted to bring up, Bill, is Russia and Ukraine. They blew up that big bridge, I guess. I'm not sure who blew it up, but somebody blew it up. And the Russians really retaliated in a very harsh way today, actually going into cities and taking out buildings. That
yes, they're striking all. The Russians are striking all over Ukraine.
Yes.
The war had been limited about a month ago to the eastern section, which they claim is part of Russia or should be part of Russia. But now it's all over again. The strikes today were in every major city. By the way, Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, was on this morning saying he thought the Ukrainians blew up the bridge. That sounds logical. That would be a logical target of theirs because it keeps equipment from being sent from Russia into the Ukraine Crimea area. They were going over that bridge. The reaction of Russia has been fierce. It has been directed specifically at civilian targets. And where are all these people on the political left who are always lecturing countries around the world, especially the Israelis? Oh, somebody was killed today. But when it comes to what is going on, the butchery in Ukraine, they show no interest in it whatever. Unbelievable.
That's right. No, again, the hypocrisy of these people is unbelievable.
Yes.
Remember how when you know, we ordered the attacks against Baghdad, and I thought the attacks from the United States were, I mean, they were very carefully planned, and we went out of their way to hit, out of our way to avoid civilian populations. And in fact, there are very few civilian populations that were hit. They may have been hit by accident, but not on purpose. And yet, you have all these people marching in the streets about the 600,000 people killed in Iraq, a figure that turned out to be wrong, Bill, as you remember. But nevertheless, I mean, they got pretty angry when the United States did it. Total silence about the Russia.
Absolutely.
It angers me. It angers me because it really shows what their true feelings are, Bill.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we have a lot of people in this country who are very much on the political left, possibly even still sympathetic to Russia, and we just don't want to recognize it. If you mention anything about it publicly, you're called a McCarthyite. And the left trained Americans very well, actually, to not go into the political beliefs of the left too carefully. And we're paying a price for that.
Absolutely. Well, as you may know, Bill, the vice president was in Austin, Texas on Saturday.
Yes. Does she know?
I'm not sure. Maybe they told her it was somebody. She went to the LBJ library, I guess. So maybe that's where she was going to, not realizing that it was in Austin, Texas. But she went to the library, Bill, to talk about abortion and voting rights. And this is supposed to be the lady in charge, or was given that task, I should say, by President Biden to be in charge or responsible
for
the border. She was literally 250 miles away from the border, and she didn't even bring it up. But here's another interesting bit of information, Bill, that you may not know. Beto O'Rourke did not join her, even though apparently the excuse from the campaign is that he was very busy campaigning, Bill.
Yes, he was too busy to see the vice president of the United States, or he
was... Who was endorsing him, by the way. Forgive me for interrupting you, but she was actually... During her speech, she endorsed him. You would think he would have been there for 2 minutes to thank her for the endorsement. No, he didn't want to be seen whatsoever with her.
No, and she might discover that he's not Hispanic. You know, that would be very... I thought your name was Beto.
Right, exactly.
Is that Beto?
Yeah.
Well, who are you?
That's right.
Am I doing here?
That's right. What are you? I thought you were Hispanic. No, I'm not really Hispanic. I'm Robert Francis, and I pretend to be Hispanic, but, you know, don't bring that up. That's a bad subject or whatever.
You know, speaking of that, there's a wonderful article that we also ran on Urgent Agenda today about the Hispanic vote in Texas and the fact that it is moving to the right. And the article specifically notes it's going way beyond Texas into other states as well, that the Hispanic community is moving, if not completely to the right, but certainly much more to the center than it has been throughout its history. This, of course, is fairly typical of immigrant groups. Mm-hmm. You know, but there's a new. You made this point a year ago before it became a story. You're the one who predicted it that this is really, there's a new generation of young Hispanic men and women who don't want to be immigrants anymore. They want to be full citizens. They want to,
right.
be, called full citizens, and they don't like illegal immigration.
That's right. In fact, the Rasmussen has a study today saying that by a good majority, I should say, Hispanics are opposed to open borders. And why wouldn't they be opposed to open borders? If you look at the mess that this open immigration has had on these cities on the border, Bill. I mean, these cities are like – they can't – I mean, you think the governor – I mean, the mayor of New York City is complaining. He should talk to the mayor of Del Rio, Texas.
Oh, absolutely.
He has a population of 15,000 people, and across the river, there were 10,000 people trying to come in. I mean, the proportion in New York is thousands out of millions. Here, it's almost like one-to-one, Bill.
And Mayor Adams in New York says that we have reached our capacity. This city has 8 million. This city has 8 million people,
right?
You know, and about 10 million on the voting rolls.
Right.
You know, it's we have many people on the voting rolls who haven't been seen in years, but they're there. This, you know, we have capacity, but we also have budgetary problems. It is not fair to have a federal policy impact the states the way the immigration crisis is.
No, but that's true. It's not just true of New York. I think it's true of the whole country. And
yes.
What New York is getting a taste of what, you know, Texas and Arizona are going through every single day. I'm glad to see that they're complaining. Maybe they will hear that in the Oval Office. Now, speaking of Hispanics, Bill, there was an incident. Maybe you're familiar with it. An incident in L.A., Los Angeles.
Oh,
where
yes.
Some members of the city council were recorded using some pretty, let's just say, interesting ways of describing blacks. And one of them even, referred to the son of a fellow black city council member or somebody as what they call changuito, which is a little monkey. That's what that means in Mexican slang. And this, of course, has created quite a bit of controversy, and I understand the lady did resign as president but will keep her seat in the city council. But there are demonstrations and protests. Look, I have been saying this for years. I think I've said it here with you, Bill, that there is a conflict brewing in our major cities between the Hispanics and the blacks.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's about power. And the Hispanics are growing. And the blacks are not in terms of population. And I think what I could hear between the lines, what I could read between the lines in all these comments is resentment of these Mexican Americans of the African Americans. They're resenting them. They're speaking poorly of them.
Right.
And I think it's based on that, Bill. I really believe it's based on this battle for power. Who's going to be the Democrats Party favorite minority? That's what it is, Bill.
That's exactly right. It's a very, very good way of putting it. Well, right now, the favorite minority clearly are African Americans. They just, you know, dominate the Democratic Party politically. And I think there is resentment on the part of other ethnic groups. I imagine that, you know, that many young Hispanics coming up are tired of hearing that the next judge or the next official of this administration or of this agency will be an African-American woman. Not that there's anything wrong with that. If he wanted to appoint an African-American woman as judge of the Supreme Court, he should have just done it, not made it into an issue, which really antagonizes other groups. They're saying we're here too. You know, are we lesser people? This is especially an issue now in the Asian American community, which is beginning to become active politically. We don't usually hear of them politically, but they're beginning to become active because they feel they've been treated terribly, that they are discriminated against in college admissions, because if they weren't discriminated against, they would hold all the places because they're so good at what they do. And
right.
and they also see the thing that they are strongest at, which is accomplishment, academic accomplishment, is being downplayed in favor of equity. And they don't like that. They don't like that. They bring a great deal to the table, and they feel they have not been rewarded sufficiently. And I agree with them.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think sometimes, you know, even though these conversations were not supposed to be released, they were private conversations between these people. Apparently, they were having a meeting. But I think sometimes you can learn a great deal about what's going on by hearing private conversations.
Sure.
And the way that, you know, the way that these people were speaking about African Americans, I don't know how they get their council back together, Bill. I mean, I don't know how these people at the next council meeting, that's going to be one heck of a problem, you know, because what these people said about each other, that's going to be, how in the world do they put the band back together, as they say, as they said in the Blues Brothers?
That's absolutely correct, and I'd love to be there, because there probably will be some attempt at reconciliation, and then you can be sure that the Hispanic members will salute our black brothers and sisters with whom we march together, and please don't think that the ill-tempered comments of one person mean anything, and then the blacks will say, even though we are wounded by the comment, we know that the great majority of our black brothers and sisters are with us on our long journey. It's all baloney.
Right.
I mean, they, as you said, there are conflicts between these groups all the time, but they are not reported as extensively as they should be.
Well, and I think I'll tell you, this particular meeting, we're just about out of time, but this particular meeting where all of this erupted was a meeting about drawing out boundaries, you know, the boundaries for the districts.
That's right.
And I've heard that from some Hispanics here in Texas who are complaining, hey, we're a much larger percentage of the population than African Americans, and they automatically get a district, and we have to fight for one.
That's exactly right.
So I think there's some of that. There's some of that tension going on. And I think maybe, I don't know, honestly, I don't know if they're going to be able to kiss and make up. They'll try, as you were indicating. But it is, I think, an expression of what's going on in many of these inner cities. I think also these inner cities are dealing, Bill, with less resources. As more and more companies are moving out, they're losing money, the crime is a problem. So it's like these cities are very toxic already. And these two groups are fighting with each other. I mean, we saw a little bit of in Chicago, Bill, when they had the riots a couple of years ago, in 2020, where many of the Hispanic council members were jumping all over the mayor saying, hey, you're killing our businesses. You're allowing our businesses to be burned up. You know, these businesses are going to leave. Who's going to employ our people? So there's a lot of tension there. And I guess it all came out in this little recording, Bill.
Well, yes, it's the old story in politics. Never say anything, even in private, that you don't want on the front page of the New York Times the next day, because it might wind up there.
Well, especially today when everybody has an iPhone that they can record a conversation.
Absolutely. It's absolutely
true.
That's the
part. And this is, by the way, one last point on this. This is the impact of this is not just that it's print. It's audio. You can actually hear these people talk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that has an even bigger impact than saying, you know, somebody said this or somebody said that, when you can actually hear them, you know, speaking of a black young man as a little monkey. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that used to get you. Wasn't that racist at one time, Bill?
Oh yes, absolutely, extremely racist.
Yes.
And still is.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's nothing to make.
Occasionally, the truth comes out. Not too often, but occasionally.
That's right. No, it's. I think we'll be talking more about that story. I don't think it's over. I think there's a lot more.
No, it's not. I agree.
Coming out with that. But Bill, as always, I want to thank you for your time, as always, and thank you so much for joining us. And keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda. And we'll talk about it next week.
Absolutely, looking forward to it, Sylvia.
Thank you so much, Bill. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Talking about a lot of things today, but this little story out of L.A. is one that we're going to be talking a lot more about as the weeks go by. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.